Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her websites, JugglingDynamite.com and VenablePark.com. Welcome back to the show, Danielle.
Hey, thanks, Jim.
Danielle, one of the headlines I noticed on your blog site was pain for buy now, pay later loan people. What's happening there? People aren't paying their loans?
Well, it's just another one of these crazy business models that's really sprung up in the past few years of all the liquidity sloshing around the financial intermediaries. And, every cycle the finance sector comes up with leverage in a new wrapper and calls it genius. And this time it was, giving these short-term loans had become the big thing, right, because they're highly lucrative for the lenders because they have such high interest rates attached to them. But, you know, in our day, they used to do things like layaway plans and that sort of thing to be able to get consumers to buy things before they had the actual full amount, you know, to stimulate demand. And then this cycle they've been doing packaging these things. So for young people in particular, I've been taking these short-term loans to buy, you know, clothes, electronics, whatever they are, and they have very high rates of interest. And then, of course, the people making the loans have been packaging them up, that old nugget of selling them off to investors. So, you know, moving the risk off book and that sort of thing. But, of course, what's happening in the last 3 or 4 months is that these loans are not getting paid back. All of a sudden, you know, they're just, well, first of all, who should be borrowing money on short-term high-interest loans to buy their clothes? The answer is nobody. But we're seeing this trend, you know, in the stress in the consumer sector because revolving credit is at an all-time high. And credit card use is back at an all-time high. So this is just more sign of people deferring payments. And that's coming back to bite people who bought these, you know, high-risk loans and packages and securities that they thought were somehow secure just because they were packaged up. And this, of course, is shades of the subprime housing bubble as well in the 2005-06 cycle where, you know, the big short where people were investors, so-called investors. They were really speculators that weren't paying much attention because they were buying junky paper that was yielding, you know, a lot less than it should have given the risk involved. And the purveyors of this, the companies that were packaging it and selling it, you know, of course, they were borrowing a ton in order to advance these loans. And it's all sort of coming to a crashing halt. And many of them went public, so, you know, selling their shares to the public. Those shares have come down 70 and 80%. So this is all just in a matter of months. It's really happening at lightning speed, which goes back to my point that is, you know, whenever you have an enormous amount of debt on debt on debt and leveraging of one sector again to purchase or make loans in another, you really do set up this wild contagion impact where, again, prices go up together on the way up. But once the down cycle comes, everything goes at lightning speed in the opposite direction, and we're really seeing that right now.
Now, moving from there, if you had cash on hand, money that you don't need for expenses and so on, where would you park your cash this year?
Well, you know, that's a long discussion with people, but I often have it. Basically, you know, the world is full of buy ideas, right? As if all you have to do is buy various things and that'll all work out. But really, you have to look at it much more foundationally. So the question always is, you know, what is what is your short-term, medium-term, long-term spending needs and plans? So I find a lot of people are still trying to pay off their mortgage, for example, in which case they really shouldn't be trying to direct cash into alternative investments or anything that is sort of market risk orientated, because they really need the principal to get out of debt. So that's the primary fixation that most people should be doing, especially now that interest rates are galloping so much higher. And as I say, the stress is evident throughout the credit sector and the consumer sector. Consumer sentiment is at a recessionary low. Personal savings has slumped back to a, you know, a very low level after the free government money has all been sort of spent. So there's a fragility in a lot of people right now, just as we're facing the prospect of much higher unemployment, because there's a lot of layoffs starting in some of the previously hot sectors like tech, et cetera, that hired a lot of people during the past couple of years, and now they're starting to lay people off as their, you know, bonds and equities start to drop in price and the credit crunch begins to spread. So really, I think people have to first of all look at strength and stability. That's always the first financial goal. So that means, you know, trying to have very low or to no personal leverage, not spending beyond your means, keeping your output, I mean, your need for cash as low as possible, and saving a buffer. And then the buffer that you save, again, if it's excess capital that you should first have a buffer for an emergency, you know, for something unpredictable or for the loss of an income or job, or if your business does poorly, you should have at least a year of operating capital for your business in a bank account. And that has no place in anything that's volatile. That should be kept in cash or savings deposits. GIC short term, that sort of thing, something liquid and very accessible. So that kind of thing, whether you're a business or a household, you should have that emergencies type fund set aside. And then when you're talking about long term money that you don't perceive needing for any short term needs, and you haven't got any, you know, house you need to buy with it, that sort of thing, then it should be looking at longer term investment prospects. And when you get to that question, it very much depends on where you are in a cycle as to what makes sense in a particular time. It isn't true that it's always a good idea to buy long-term, like stocks or equity-based things. A lot of these high-risk products, it really function of what price you're able to get them at, and that has to do with the cycle. So it really, it's not like you can sort of carte blanche give a lot of, you know, you should do this or you should do that. The same thing, you know, people talk about precious metals. I was writing about that on the blog this week. A lot of people think that gold or silver or bullion, this type of thing, is a great diversifier. What we're finding, of course, is that the price of those assets have actually been highly correlated with everything else in this cycle. And so people have been very disappointed that, you know, when the credit crunch is beginning here, that gold and silver haven't really taken off the way people expected them to. And that's because, again, there's this high correlation between financial markets right now, where a lot of paper versions, a lot of speculation, a lot of flows for the same reasons of low rates, looking for somewhere to be, has really gone into all manner of things in the past few years. And so as the money starts to feel stressed, as liquidity is a premium, as people need to raise cash, they start sort of selling everything across the board. So it's really a very tricky time to find meaningful diversification. Bonds have also had a rough go this year. However, there is a differentiation that is starting to be made and will indeed be made with greater focus, I believe, as we head into this economic slowdown, which, you know, the World Bank and many institutions are now recognizing that we're likely to see a stall-level speed of global growth in 2022. Over the next year, certainly from here into 2023, the prospects of a recession are very significant. And so that really means that things like corporate debt or high-risk debt, these junky papers that have been sold to investors, the real estate sector, of course, we can talk about, but it's under great stress. So all of these securities and paper that's been sold linked to these various areas are kind of all trading off together. Government bonds have sold off too on this interest rate shock and expectation for governments for central banks to raise rates very aggressively. However, I think that what we're starting to see here is that there was actually capital flows into the highest grade government bonds during this month. Actually, from about May 10th on, we've seen it. So this is something I've been expecting, where you get a dash for liquidity and security of principal, and so funds then start to differentiate between, you know, all the riskiest stuff and looking for somewhere sort of safer to park. They typically flow into things like government bonds. So I think that's one of the few places that, and cash, the U.S. dollar is actually holding up. Interestingly, today, oil, being one of the few commodities that has has had upward momentum in a field of everything else that's been softening. I mean, lumber's down 45% just this month. Copper's off significantly. You know, these are, I think, reflecting this downtrend in global growth. The commodities that we use for many things are starting to recede in terms of their strength, just anticipating a lot less demand as we go forward. But the U.S. dollar has actually been holding up well, and the Canadian dollar is lower today, even as oil has been much higher. So I think those are the few places. It's a very tricky investment environment right now.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, is the easy money boondoggle about to end? And maybe explain what that is.
Yeah, so again, back to easy money. You know, I always want to say that in quotes because it's anything easy, anything but easy, actually, in real life. So the flooding of the financial system, again, with zero interest rate policies and trillions in quantitative easing, liquidity into financial intermediaries, meant that the world was awash in cash. And when money is free, people do dumb things with it, and that's been true in spades this cycle. So there's been a lot of, again, because the traditional things that, you know, like rents became so very low yielding because asset prices and properties became too expensive. So the yields in terms of net rent you could get were very low. So people, interest rates were low, so deposit rates they could get off of their savings and safe paper, safe deposits, and certainly in the savings accounts and that sort of thing was almost nil. And the dividends, even on, because stocks rebounded so sharply out of 2020, the dividends yield was very, very low. And so what happened was people need income. That's just the primary fact of life. We all have bills that we need to pay monthly, and we need to pay it with cash flow. So because cash flows were so low, people turned to what they'd call alternatives. And really these were a bunch of, private equity has become very, very popular this cycle, which is, you know, there's some private equity people that have been at it a long time and know what they're doing, but there've also been a lot of people coming into that space who really just took borrowed cheap money at very low interest rates and then, you know, promised to do various things with it. Some of them were like SPACs, if you remember, that special purpose acquisition vehicles that were all the rage a couple of years ago, where, you know, they didn't even have anything bought to buy yet, but they were promising that they would buy people things. Well, of course, they took in a whole bunch of investor deposits on very sketchy sort of outlines of what it is they were going to do. And a lot of those companies, you know, are either couldn't find anything to deploy the capital into or deployed it into all sorts of sketchy things. And indeed, their shares are now falling. Some of them are down 70% and 80%. Others are saying they're going to go bankrupt. They have to give the capital back because they weren't able to deploy it. So there's that whole mess. Then the private equity people, traditionally, they were, they bought, fringe they were sort of the high risk players that had, you know, a portion of high net worth people's portfolios. In this environment, they became much more mainstream because of the circumstances I'm describing, where a lot of pensions, for example, because government bonds were yielding so low, they turned to these private equity wizards. And they traditionally have had things that are, kind of very illiquid. And locked in. So they would take people's, capital from, as I say, wealthy investors and keep it for a period of, you know, months to years where they say you can't have it back because we're doing that. And there's a timeline here and we can't, you know, just produce liquidity instantly and if you decide you want to sell. So a lot of people have entered into these things thinking they were, you know, really bright and genius alternatives and ways to make money in a challenging environment. And, some of them have worked out, but a lot of them haven't. A lot of them, as I say, are highly illiquid. And you get into this environment where people are in a cash crunch, wanting to get money back, realizing that, for example, real estate prices are not cooperating in the way that they were. Private equity was borrowing on floating lines of credit and buying up all manner of real estate in the past few years. They bought all swaths of single family dwellings in many areas. Some 40% of the buyers in the last couple of years in the GTA area and many other areas in the States and hot areas were more than 40% were these private investor funds, private equity, hedge funds, all these different conglomerates that were borrowing short and buying up these things and then packaging it and selling it to investors. I call that a boondoggle because the very definition of that is a lot of activity looking like it's adding value, but in fact not. And that's the case. And many of them were, from anything from an outright Ponzi type operation where they could only function on bringing in new investor capital at all times to, you know, as I say, floating, money. Well, what's happened to floating rates, of course? They've, tripled in some areas. Mortgage rates have gone up, excessively fast in this cycle because of the inflationary scare. So all of that is really bringing a cash crunch. And, you know, the thing about the real estate investing, I mean, private equity was buying, out because there were so many of them looking for something to buy because of this excess liquidity. They've been buying up all sorts of private companies, you know, like there was a story in the Globe on the weekend about how they were buying out, you know, pharmacies and veterinary clinics and dental clinics. And, you know, they've been really offering the sort of model this cycle has been multiples of revenue, which is a real red flag in terms of someone not doing any prudent investment assessment, because you traditionally you buy businesses based on a multiple of earnings, net income, you know, income after expenses. But in this environment, people just threw that out and they were looking at, well, let's just pay for sales. This is before expenses, just cash flow. Let's pay multiples of that. And many of these private equity companies have been paying 10, 20, 30 times just sales without any attention to what kind of income can be actually made net. And so the competition there with, you know, while that's happening, it's good for the people that are cashing out. It's great. It's terrible for anyone that's like, you know, coming into a legitimate business operator in a sector who's trying to actually run a business where they can make a profit, turn a profit, or buy out an existing owner with some expertise and knowing how to run it themselves. If they can't borrow cheap and, you know, spend 20 and 30 times sales, they can't compete in this environment. So a lot of really bad allocations have been made. Private equity has been, you know, lately focused on trying to buy up the land under mobile home parks. I mean, it's just bonkers because everything has been really distorted in the process. So, I mean, the good thing in all this is that the rate shock has really brought a sudden sobriety to some of these business models, which made no sense. And what you're starting to see, of course, is that this is a contagious thing. As I say, the cash crunch is contagious. Once asset prices don't cooperate, once real estate stagnates and indeed starts to go down, a lot of these properties were bought at multiples that meant they had stagnant or zero actual net income. If they were trying to be rented out, they were, you know, just barely breaking even, or many of them were being rented out at a loss. And so what happens is once the property values stop going up, everyone starts to say, hey, why are we holding this? It's costing us money and it's actually going down. And then you get this urge of people needing to sell. And so you're starting to see that in all kinds of asset classes. Where things are illiquid, then people turn to what they can sell, right? Whatever, if some of the private equity money is locked up and it can't be cashed out for a few months, then they will turn to selling anything else they can. And that's why I think we're going to see a very contagious spread continue here in financial markets to property markets to debt markets. And ultimately, this will be healthy in clearing out all these weak hands and, you know, imprudent players from the system and bring value back to the table for those who can preserve their cash and know what to look for.
Also, on your blog, a study shows that increasing debt brings on increasing stress and that leads to health problems. What can we do?
Well, that was a new study, but that, I mean, we've been following that for a long time, but just the fact that, you know, having debt is a stressor, especially as you age. And the new trend in this crazy period has been more and more mortgage debt, as you know, Jim, but also people who typically would, you know, the majority would go into retirement debt-free and mortgage-free. Well, in this particular decade, that's no longer been the norm, and a lot of people have been adding debt as they head towards retirement, either for their own spending or for their own housing and or to help children and grandchildren lever into the property market. So it's been this, you know, sort of gift that keeps on giving in terms of adding to household debt and stress. And of course, I say this is a compounding cost because, you know, people are in bad physical health for many reasons, many lifestyle reasons, stress being certainly one of them. And compounding that with debt just means that we're ultimately paying, not just in the terms of asset bubbles and lost productivity, which for sure Canada is because we haven't been investing in innovation. We've been in these pump and dump schemes more than anything else. And what it also means is that the healthcare system is that much more burdened, which again in Canada is funded by taxpayers. So it's really this nasty loop.
Danielle, anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up the show?
I just think people can need to keep trying to keep their wits about them and think through this in terms of, you know, it's not, the complexity has been the problem and the opacity of everything. If you can just sort of go to basics in, like I said, managing your cash well, managing your health, keeping your debt down, you know, paying off whatever you can, not having a bunch of assets in a bunch of your savings and asset bubbles right now, keeping some cash buffer. These sorts of things will pay off over time. And when we come out the other end of this cleaning out cycle, which is happening right now, there is going to be a lot of opportunity for the people that are able to take advantage of it. So it's not so much a dark story. Actually, this necessary phase is one of the positive and progressive things that needs to happen to get to the better conditions.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. If you have any questions for Danielle or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.